Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Civics 101 is supported in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Who is the current Speaker of the House?
Don't even know.
Will they rule in the president's favor or will they send it to the Supreme Court?
You can't refer to a senator directly by their name.
Congressional redistricting.
Separation of power.
Executive orders.
The National Security Council.
Civics 101.
This is Civics 101, the podcast refresher course on the basics of how our democracy works. I'm Virginia Prescott. Our team here has been working on a transition for the past few weeks as our sitting host, namely me, prepares to hand the reins over to our newly elected Civics 101 guides, Nick Capodice and Hannah McCarthy. So for this, my last Civics 101, before I take up my new office at Georgia Public Broadcasting, we're going to find out how the mother of all handoffs takes place, the presidential transition of power. And joining me is Max Steyer. He's president and CEO of Partnership for Public Service. Max, welcome to Civics 101.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so say it's election day in the United States. A new president gets elected, but the old one is still in office. So what's the first thing the incumbent, meaning sitting president's team, does when the new president is elected?
Well, you better hope that they've been doing a bunch of things before election day, because if you wait until election day to get ready for the transition, you've already missed the bus. There are about 70-plus days between the election and the inauguration, and it's not nearly enough to address, as you just said, the mother of all transitions.
So when would that team have started putting together a transition?
Well, so, and you'd said something really important there, which is that there are multiple teams that have to be focused on this. So you have the incumbent president that now by law ought to have been focusing on this easily a year pre-election. And that includes identifying people in each of the agencies to serve as a transition coordinator and begin the planning process. But for the incoming president, they also needed a transition operation, and that operation really ought to have begun in earnest at the beginning of that year. So you're looking at, you know, 8-9 months of work, really, to be ready for election day. And it is a huge undertaking. You think, again, we all learn about the peaceful transfer of power as being one of the great qualities of our government, but no one tells you that it's peaceful but ugly. And you think about it, it's a $4 trillion organization, 4 million employees when you think about the military and the civilian employees, and hundreds of different operating entities. It is just so large and so complicated and so consequential that you need to begin aggressively with a good plan and very early.
Okay, so you said by law. What are the official laws or rules for the transfer of power?
So there are a bunch of new ones, which is a good thing, because we had a system up until relatively recently that essentially was Groundhog Day, and you would have incoming administrations go through a transition process, start from scratch, really at best have access to some people who had done it before, but really no consequential resource of tools and prior history. And part of what we've done at the Partnership for Public Service is to help get Congress to pass some laws that provide better structure. So now, it used to be historically that incoming transition teams would only get support for transition planning post the election. And we were able to get a law passed that now provides support immediately after the conventions. And the reason why this is really important is that historically, campaigns have understandably viewed job number one as winning, and anything that distracted from that or might undermine that, they would ignore it. And they saw transition as that. They saw it as a political vulnerability. If you started planning for a transition before the election, you could be accused of measuring the drapes or celebrating early. And as a result, the transition planning was done subscale and generally behind the curtain. And the law that I just described now changes that. So they have political protection. They now have a congressional mandate to begin pre-election. And we saw the results of that for the first time on both sides with the work that then-candidate Clinton and then-candidate Trump did in this past election, which was quite extensive and public prior to the election. So that is part of the legal framework that has changed that is very important. On the flip side, there are now requirements for the incumbent administration to do work prior to the election to prepare for a good handoff to the new president coming in. So there is new law that really does some important things. I don't think we're entirely done yet with what needs to change, but they're big improvements.
So who comprises this transition team? Are they people who will go on to be members of the president-elect staff or, you know, campaign staffers, that kind of thing?
Well, it's an excellent question. And the answer is you have different responsibilities when you are a campaign person versus doing the transition versus actually governing. And I think one of the real challenges we have in our system today is that there is this huge cohort of political appointments that are made by a new president that is unparalleled by any democracy. So a new president typically puts in about 4,000 political appointments. And of those, 1,200 plus require Senate confirmation, which is a very difficult obstacle course. What that means is that, in fact, new administrations often do staff government with a lot of people that were serving in the campaign and in the transition, and not recognizing that the skills that you need, the capabilities you need, are usually very different.
So what are those transition team members doing in these days between the election and inauguration? There are appointments to be made, people starting to prepare for new jobs. How do they do it?
Yeah. The period between the election and inauguration becomes frenetic because you are taking over this phenomenally large organization. You put your finger on the, in my view, the most important element. You got to have highly qualified people ready to come into these positions. And they need to be working well as a team. That's something that is often overlooked. So one big element is getting the right people in, having them work effectively together. Another is in preparing to actually implement the promises that the president-elect has made on the campaign trail. A smart transition operation is really thinking through how they convert those promises to actual action. There's, you know, usually someone who's coordinating the relationship between Congress and certainly the party that they come from on the Hill. So, and that is an area where a lot of transitions underinvest. They need to really make sure that Congress is on board with the changes that they want to see happening, and creating that front end understanding, a shared vision, and of how they're going to work well together is one of the most important investments that a transition team can make.
When do the incoming staffers get security clearance?
For the very top people, it can happen relatively quickly. But if you're thinking about, you know, general averages, there, I was just in a meeting today where, you know, folks were complaining about the fact it can take 700 days to get clearances for some people. So, I mean, that's a very challenging process and a big problem. The law now permits campaigns to actually start the clearance process for key people even pre-election. And so, once more, smart transitions will have teed up a set of core people that they need cleared and ready for jobs, both in the White House and in the agencies. Because if you don't start that early, you won't have your team on the ground when the game starts.
So what I'm hearing, Max, there's a lot of handoff of, let's call it, soft knowledge, you know, institutional knowledge about how jobs get done, how agencies work, projects that are in progress. But have there been examples of, you know, real antipathy in those kind of handoffs of current people in power in the White House or other agencies not necessarily handing off in a graceful way?
So you will always find examples where someone didn't do it real well. And there are anecdotes about, you know, the handoff to you know, the Bush team from President Clinton's team, where there were allegations that, you know, W's were removed from keyboards and things like that. I will say that those are truly the exception. Almost everyone who serves in government understands that they are there in order to serve the people. And they are remarkably committed to the success of the new team coming in. The challenge is less antipathy than lack of understanding about how to make that handoff really effective. And more often than not, it's the team coming in that fails to take advantage of the opportunity to soak up the knowledge from the people leaving.
How about the current administration, the one that's holding power? What are they actually required to share with the incoming administration?
The incumbent president is required to organize, even if they're just in their first term, to organize as if a transition might happen. And that means on an annual basis, they actually need to bring together representatives, the lead transition person for every agency, and they need to have somebody who has got that responsibility to talk about how they will prepare for the transition. And they are, by law, required to provide information to the potentially incoming successor. You know, at the end of the day, the law is important, but how it is followed is even more so. And, you know, I will say that in sort of modern transition planning, President Bush did a phenomenal job handing off the responsibility to President Obama and his team. And I think President Obama did a phenomenal job of preparing and being ready to hand off to President Trump. And I hope that that becomes, you know, the expectation for, you know, the President Trump's team and everyone that comes thereafter. And I think, you know, there's, as I say, a broad sense, even the you know, political appointees, that they have a responsibility to the country, and that our government is a core asset for the public and not for any party.
So nobody glued the drawer shut or anything like that?
You know, and look, with enough people, you'll find somebody who didn't do it right. But the more important thing is, what are the norms, and are those norms being followed? And I think we're setting new norms, and they are, in the large measure, being followed. We are still at a pretty nascent stage, I would describe, around transition planning and making it an effective operation. We're trying to create a learning system, and that's vital because it's such a big job.
Well, you're talking about a lot of the practical steps, a lot of the operational steps, but we do hear about these meetings between the incumbents and the president-elect. And about letters, you know, George H.W. Bush's letter to President Clinton circulated widely. I guess it was when the transition was going on for the Trump administration. Letters from the sitting president left for the incoming one. What, besides the practical, does the incumbent president try to share with the president-elect?
That's a very personal, I think, question. You know, we all see the pictures of the president as they arrive and they leave, and you quite clearly see that it's truly dog years that they've lived, and they got the gray hair and the lines, and I mean, the responsibility is phenomenal. You know, no one, you know, really comes to the job having done it before, and I think that in many ways, I think that the most important thing that can be offered is less one-time advice than a relationship that would enable, you know, the new person coming in to come back to the incumbent. And I think that's true for the president. It's true for secretaries of agencies. It's true for assistant secretaries of agencies. There ought to be a, you know, again, an understanding that there'll be different policy priorities. We have a democratic process to help, you know, identify what the public wants to see as their vision for us going forward. But in these jobs are so challenging and hard, and the opportunity for good and for ill are so large that you really want to make sure there is a community and there's a sense of responsibility for the incumbent to be there for the new person, and that the new person knows they can rely on that incumbent for advice. I mean, that to me would be the most helpful thing that could be communicated. And the new person has to take advantage of it, because I think, by and large, the willingness to be there as a resource is almost inevitably there.
This may be a weird question, but I always wondered, does the first family sleep at the White House the night before their inauguration, or is it night of?
Not the night before. I mean, it really is an amazingly, sort of quick transfer. You've got, 12 o'clock, 12:01, the day of the inauguration, you've got a new president. And that's true in terms of ownership of the White House. And there's a unbelievable operation to move the old president out, the new president in, to do new paint, and the work that's done by the, career people who are managing this process is really stellar. And that happens in every agency across the entire government as well. You've got a new secretary coming in, hopefully confirmed in an ideal world, and the world we should live in. You've got more than the secretary, but, a deputy secretary and the key leadership team also ready to walk in on day one. It's actually a flip of a switch. It's not a slow, you can move in over the next few weeks. It's, right away. On the White House side, the team is unbelievable. And the other unusual aspect of the White House is that everyone turns over. So in the agencies themselves, the career workforce will inevitably be way larger and ought to be way larger than the political team. And in fact, the political team should understand that they can't get their job done without working collaboratively and effectively with the career folks. In the White House, it's a different proposition. You don't have pretty much anyone around that can tell you how it was done before or how to operate things. You're bringing your whole team with you.
Max Dyer, President and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, a nonprofit whose Center for Presidential Transition helps candidates and their transition teams navigate the process of becoming president. Max, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hey, thank you, and congratulations on your contribution to civic education.
Thank you so much.
That is it for Civics 101 today, but before we go, we're doing a handoff of our own.
Yeah, as Virginia mentioned at the top of the show, this is her last episode of Civics 101. She's moving on to Georgia Public Broadcasting, where she'll be the host of the daily news show On Second Thought.
I'm Hannah McCarthy.
And I'm Nick Capodice.
From here on out, Nick and I will be co-hosting the podcast.
Both of you guys are theater. You have theater background.
Yeah.
We do,
right?
We do.
Indeed.
You're going to do a little song and dance thing?
We're going to do a Civics 101 Christmas Carol, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
So you did the transitions episode. You recorded the transitions interview.
Mm-hmm.
What did they say is usually done? I wasn't there. You were there, Hannah, mm-hmm. right? What's usually done when one transitions to the other?
There's a lot of preparation, because I think he made a really great point. This is Max Dyer. He said, nobody's done this before. Nobody has been president before their president. Unless, of course, you were elected, and then you lost an election, and then you won an election.
Has that ever happened before?
Yeah, I think that
That's
has
a good
happened.
Question.
Who was it?
We should know this.
It's pretty embarrassing.
Well, actually, we shouldn't know this. That's the wonderful thing about this show, that we are not civic scholars. What do you guys want to know? Anything else?
Is there any part of the transition that we haven't done yet?
I haven't written you a letter on
what?
White House stationery.
No letter on White House stationery?
I don't have White House stationery, unfortunately.
On NHPR stationery?
Producers really dropped the ball
Good
on
luck.
That one.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, if there's anything you can tell us that you would put in that letter, you can just tell us.
I would just say that, as a friend of mine, Jason Schinder, who's a poet, who's now passed away, said, humility will find you. So no matter what you do, be humble, because you're going to make mistakes. But that's okay. You know, that's what makes you sound like a human being.
Some of the best advice I've ever got.
Yeah. This episode of Civics 101 was produced by me, Hannah McCarthy, and Nick Capodice. Our executive producer is Erica Janik, and our staff includes Taylor Quimby, Justine Paradise, Jimmy Gutierrez, and Ben Henry. Our music is by Broke for Free.
And if you've got questions about the government, and we know you do, you know who to call. Hannah and I are on top of it. You can email us at civics101@nhpr.org.
Civics 101 is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I'm someone who researches everything. For my job, yes, but also for my life. Not a thing purchased, not a practitioner seen, not a trail hiked, even, without thorough vetting, recommendations, comparisons, etc. This is a tiring and extraordinarily time-consuming way to exist, but I want to know that my money and what time remains after the vetting process is being put into the right hands, as I do not have much of either. Would that there were some service that could simply tell me what was right for me instead of the other way around. Well, at least when it comes to hiring, there is. It's called Indeed. With Indeed, you do not search for the perfect candidate. They are matched to you. Indeed did a survey, they tell me, and apparently 93% of employers say that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. 93%. Do you have any idea how often I am resigned to a 45% out of people say this is maybe a good thing, so try it out? Indeed uses 140 million qualifications and preferences to fine-tune their matching engine to your preferences. You know that feeling that the right person is out there? You just need to meet them. Indeed tells you who they are, and then you can message, screen, and schedule with them through the website. Give me an Indeed for a non-irritating sheer mineral sunscreen, am I right? And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/civics. Just go to Indeed.com/civics right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/civics. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.